Before we begin, I wanted to give a huge shout out to the folks at Amazon Music for partnering with us on this episode of the Inside Line F1 podcast. But more on this later. Right then, let's get right into today's episode. Now that we've seen that the first race of the season didn't provide as much entertainment as we wanted, two people have actually stepped up and said, right, we'll take this into our control. The FIA and Red Bull, the main perpetrators of all the dullness that we see on track, have elected one person each to stand up and make the sport more entertaining. Lo and behold, Mohammed Ben Sulayem and Christian Horner are creating more controversy than a Drive to Survive episode can ever do. Folks, this is the Inside Line F1 podcast, and today we're going to be talking about everything but what happens on track in Formula 1, because this is the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix preview, and believe it or not, Kunal, even though we're coming to one of the fastest, actually, the fastest street circuit in the world, a circuit that's filled with crazy turns, with incredibly narrow areas where you go through speeds of 250 to 70 kph, a circuit that's so technically challenging, and a night race by the harbor in Saudi Arabia. This is meant to be the perfect Formula One venue, but the only thing that's on our mind is a gate. What do we call the MBS gate now? The private jet gate? Or like, what's your terminology for it now?
MBS gate. I'm probably just going to call it that. But there are so many lanes within that gate, if we sort of just quickly summarize it. So the first is he tried to interfere with the race result, 2023 Saudi Arabian Grand Prix itself.
One year anniversary.
There we go. The second was he used a private jet of the FIA a little too much. So expenses are out of whack, which is what happens with a lot of sports administrators around the world. Sorry to say, I'm just putting him in a bucket there. And the third, which actually will hurt Formula One the most. By Formula One, I mean Liberty Media, Stefano Domenicali, is when MBS tried to interfere in not letting the Las Vegas Grand Prix circuit be homologated or approved by the FIA for last year's Las Vegas Grand Prix, the inaugural Grand Prix. And one of the reasons why they will take it a little too personally is because that's the race the FIA turned promoter for. That's the race, you know, FOM, F1, Liberty Media, they just released full year earning results for 2023. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is one big factor for their massive jump in earnings in 2023. Now imagine MBS directly tried to stop Formula One from having those earnings. So he is a threat. And I think all of this is going to be with the 2025 elections for the FIA presidency coming up. But hey, could we get rid of him earlier? That's probably what a lot of people in Formula One are thinking right now.
I mean, it's a lot like Daniel Ricciardo at McLaren, except that you know that the person is trying in the case of Daniel. You know, he's giving it his best. You know that when the moment arrives, he can do something special. Blunder after blunder after blunder. But the blunders are fine. See, blunders are human. But personal blunders, things like trying to influence trying to influence the cancellation of the Las Vegas Grand Prix, that is beyond me. Because that race in itself, Kunal, accounted for what? A 25% growth in Formula One's incomes or revenues? I'm not sure about the exact number. But in a quarterly basis, their revenues grew by some 60-odd% from 2022 to 2023 in that quarter four for Formula One. It's mind-blowing, the kind of financial superpower that it had. And then on top of that, isn't it funny that the president of an organization, one of whose main roles is to make sure that the finances are used well, among many other things, has totally forgotten that if you end up spending a bit too much as a non-profit organization, you can actually be taxed kind of like a private organization in France, which would mean that the whole purpose of the FIA gets defeated. How do you do that? I mean, it's just, upon that, there are the sexist remarks as well. Upon that, the stewarding bit as well, right? Because we had a chat before this episode And I thought doing this was normal, that they're trying to influence the stewards in terms of their decision-making. Because back in the day, when we had Jean-Marie Balestre, again, another very ego-centered, personal-driven, vendetta-driven sort of president of the FIA, who did things that are probably very inexplicable in a sporting sense. Back in the day, he used to be somewhat similar as well. But now, in the meanwhile, we've had so many good FIA presidents. And then this, it's just like, where are we now, Kunal? I think it's a bit hard to label the Bensalem controversies as gates, because in my mind, the entire presidency has been a gate in itself.
It has. It absolutely has. When you asked where are we, I'm just going to read out the official results from F1's release on what day? 28th of February, so a week ago or something. The Las Vegas Grand Prix had 16 billion social media impressions, whoa, even though Max Verstappen said he felt like a clown in there, right? The revenue was up 25%. The Las Vegas Grand Prix was significantly attributed, right, for this jump. And the main point here is this jeopardy that he's trying to put. What else is he trying to inflict on Formula One? We've been inflicted with a lot of things. But what else is he trying to inflict, which can directly impact the business, right? He runs the governing body. $40 million is what he's paid. Not he, but the FIA is paid a year to adjudicate, to govern Formula One. There have been discrepancies in how the FIA have also done things, right? So not only is he getting his house, not getting his house in order, he's also not doing enough, or he is doing enough to throw stones at Formula One's house and business. And that's a bit of a concern, I would say. And if I can just switch to the other gate, which I know we are going to talk of, is the Christian Horner gate, right? With all of that that happens, it doesn't impact the business of Formula One. If anything, it gets a lot more publicity. But what MBS is doing is probably impacting the business, the credibility, and the earnings of Formula One.
I mean, think about it. If you're Christian Horner and you're getting so much of revenue from running Red Bull Racing as a championship winning team, someone tries to jeopardize the biggest revenue earner of the entire season. Someone tries to jeopardize your share in the sport by allowing another team to come in. Again, that discussion, a bit more subjective. We'll talk about that. But someone tries to jeopardize the biggest earning potential of the entire season. Someone tries to cut your share apart by adding a new shareholder into the sport. And then you just look at them and go, are you stupid or what? Because of all these things. And it's surely that the frustration might be real and there is a genuine reason to be pissed. And also, I think there is another genuine reason to be pissed and another controversy, because now, 8 minutes into this episode, we have hardly spoken about the Grand Prix at hand because there is another gate, the Christian Horner gate, or the WhatsApp gate, or the I don't see any. I mean, we've seen the developments in the last week, Kunal. We've seen the so-called fake or real screenshots, which I know you and me wouldn't have wanted to see at all. It's someone else's business, someone else's life. None of it pertains to us. But from what we can tell, clearly, it's a personal attack. There is no other reason for Jos Verstappen to come out in the media and say, I don't want Max to drive in a team where Christian Horner is. And there is no other reason for someone to send these so-called true photographs just 30 minutes after Red Bull announced the result of its investigation, which was independent. And also sending it to journalists whose contact details are normally pretty hidden. How does that happen? There's clearly someone inside the paddock stirring the pot. Where do you see this whole story going? Like, what's happening in this?
9 minutes in and we are still talking of all the off-track stories to track, because there might be actually not even two races in, you know, the Sunday will be 4% of the season done, whatever. But no, the truth is there might not be as many on-track stories to track, which is why these off-track stories are anyway taking a lot of precedence. And my reading in Red Bull Racing, based on the sources I've spoken to, some direct, some indirect, is that it's a classic power struggle. It's a power struggle between Christian Horner and the Red Bull owners in Austria. It's about who stands where in the power struggle. The Uwida family seems to be backing Christian Horner. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Verstappens, Helmut Marko, and the Austrians are on the same page, right? So the question that not a lot of people are asking is, why is Christian Horner trying to act on his own? Why is he trying to get an external buyer who is trying to get Red Bull Technologies, the owner, the investing company of Red Bull Racing, yeah, as a separate entity with the Ueda family and so on? And my assumption, and it's a very strong assumption, is that there were already changes that Red Bull Austria was going to make to Red Bull Racing, which wouldn't have made Christian Horner happy. To which he said, screw this, I will just go and buy the team myself. Yep. And the other thing, I think, the other thing is, even though Christian Horner has more dominant eras to his name, the one thing in comparison to Toto Wolff, the one thing he doesn't have that Toto Wolff has is shareholding.
Yeah.
Is the fact Christian is still an employee of Red Bull Racing, whereas Toto Wolff owns a large part of the team. So could it have been that in all of this, everybody now wants ownership of the team? Given that Liberty Media has suddenly turned these teams into unicorn valuations. We saw a team like Alpine is close to $1 billion in valuation.
Yeah.
Right? So a lot of this is down to power struggle. But one thing is for certain, and that the Red Bull Racing dominance is now going to end with this level of implosion, right? Because there is so much doubt that people are going to bring into their organizational workings, right? And what do I mean by doubt? Right now, Verstappen trusts that Red Bull is acting in his best interests, that Red Bull trusts that Verstappen's and whatever, Horner and everyone else is acting in the best interests of the team and the company. But that itself has now got a crack, right? Yep. Can this crack be mended, right? And it's just reminds me two things. You know, Ferrari went through this with Michael Schumacher, Sean Todd, and Ross Brawn. They wanted to break this trio because they were operating on their own outside of the typical Ferrari corporate culture, right? And then the second is, my hat's off to Mercedes that yep. they could do this for 7 seasons on the trot. Somebody like Red Bull Racing, less than 2 years after Dietrich has passed away, is probably going through this power struggle. And I've had a really long chat, but this was crucial to set the context yeah. off.
Yeah, I agree. We needed to bring this up because all the pictures, all the headlines, all the statements, all the investigation results, they mean nothing unless you understand the bigger picture. And back in the day, the sentiment that the journalists have been reporting is that the Red Bull family, which was, again, owned by Dietrich Mateschitz at one point, they were completely backing Christian Horner. Now that trust and now that backing comes from two sources, the Red Bull family and the Red Bull Austria, instead of just one strong, powerful man in Dietrich, suddenly it has opened up the door to so much. And ultimately, right, you can't blame Christian Horner for anything, because the end goal of any leader or any human or any organization or even any organism for that matter is survival. This is all part of his survival instinct, everything that he's doing. Which is kind of crazy how this whole story is going. So we should track it with more depth. But I think now...
It's survival instincts. Yeah. But also, it's about ego. It's about power. It's about control.
Yeah.
Okay. And that is the typical human tendencies that come into play when you are running such a dominant force, right? And I really hope that people are not throwing Christian Horner under the bus so that Max Verstappen can go race for Mercedes, because of this whole conversation that his clause is about who works at Red Bull, whether it's Marco, whether it's Horner himself, whether it's Newey, that's a part of his exit clause. It would be a shame if this is being done just so that Verstappen can get out of the contract they have with Red Bull Racing. But frankly speaking, I think they are all the pawns in all of this.
Yeah,
I think the power play is at a much higher level. Also, it, like I said, what changes were Red Bull trying to bring to Red Bull Racing? And by Red Bull, I mean the energy drinks, bringing a change to Red Bull Racing that prompted Christian Horner in the first place to try and buy the team on his own, because he's been happy with Red Bull. He's got Marco, yeah. he's got Newey, he's got Max. The only thing he didn't have was shareholding, which could have you know, been one of the reasons as well that he did it. But the second was Red Bull trying to bring about a change that would have taken power away from Christian Horner and so on. So I hope this has got nothing to do with Red Bull energy drinks at a large level, right? Because Red Bull Racing is one of their most visible entities. And you know, could this be a crack in the overall business of Red Bull? My goodness.
And think about it. If you're Christian Horner, an energy drinks company came to you back in 2004, if I'm not mistaken, earlier, because the whole Jaguar takeover happened at that time. But 20-odd years ago, an energy drinks company came to you and said, we want you to run a Formula One team. But you expanded that to becoming a multiple-time world champion, one of the most dominant teams in history, and also setting up an engine manufacturing company and a supercar division. All of this on your own. It's something that's completely been set up by you. It's your baby. You want shareholding in this so that you can survive all of the chaos that's happening in the background. This is your team. And that's the only thing that he has to do, survival instincts. But we also need to kick in our survival instincts as a Formula One podcast, because we need to talk about the on-track stuff as well, whatever little there is. But importantly, there is a lot, because amidst all this chaos, Kunal, we've actually very conveniently forgotten that the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix is the home of one of the best circuits in Formula One. 27 corners, average speeds that will blow your mind. The barriers being extremely close to the track. I mean, that's definitely going to be one point that the drivers will bring up very, very quickly. But the way the corners are put down, I think this weekend, what we all should do as a mark of respect for Formula One, as a mark of why we watch the sport in the first place, turn down the comms. This comes from a commentator himself. Turn down the comms on Saturday and just watch the cars on their quali laps. Watch how fast they turn. Watch how quickly they change direction. I think we really, really are going to get a good weekend full of car racing. Maybe just not at the top, but the whole midfield battle, the whole battle between McLaren, Ferrari, Mercedes, and just the sight of cars in the night tackling a street circuit of this technical challenge. I think it's going to be a good weekend, regardless of all that's happened in the background.
I think so. I mean, especially from the racing spectacle, I think, you know, it's down to how the cars will look in the lights, these super fast circuit corners that you spoke of, and drivers keeping it clean, no track limits, because clearly you'll just be in the barriers, although some corners we still have the white line and so on. But you said it's one of the most beautiful spectacle street circuits. I absolutely agree. In fact, they've released the new renders of a new circuit they want to build in Qiddiya, if that's the pronunciation. But truth be told, I mean, it's the world's fastest street circuit, 27 high-speed corners. Like you said, I was speaking to Kush Maini, the Indian Formula 2 driver, in the morning, and I asked him, what's your secret to a key quick lap? And he said, Kunal, from turns 5 to 10, if you are offline, you actually mess up that whole sector. So just being on the line, which is a very high-speed line, is what could happen. Also, it's a race that could end within 1 hour 20 minutes, because that's how quick the race goes, you know. And if there are no stoppages specifically, now imagine having a sprint, which pretty much defeats the purpose if you're going to take 20 minutes longer to run a whole Grand Prix in Saudi Arabia, right? But lots of stoppages as well, Somal, as we could expect this weekend, which will disrupt qualifying strategy as well as race strategy. I think we've seen 4 safety cars in the last 3 years, 2 full red flag sessions as well. Lots of DRS battles, something I know that really charged you up when you saw Leclerc and Verstappen. So that's something we could end up seeing as well. Because even though it's a high-speed circuit and you're following each other and so on, there are 2 or 3 very distinct areas of overtaking. I think turns 1 and 2 is one. Turn 13 is one, which is a banked corner, allows for different lines through it. And then, of course, the last hairpin, the turn 27, where we could witness a fair bit of overtaking, right? But I have a fact about motorsport, about Mecca. You know, usually when you say the Mecca of motorsport, you think it's Silverstone, because, you know, motorsport and all the history it's had over the years, right? Mm-hmm. Mecca is just 90-odd or 100-odd kilometers from Jeddah. So literally the Mecca of motorsport could technically well be the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, just for physical distance and location reasons.
And I think as a circuit as well, it deserves to be given a certain title, maybe not the Mecca, but a word on why this weekend is going to be so much fun. On the whole, right, this circuit is very fast, but also not very abrasive, which is pretty much the opposite of what we saw in Bahrain. The weather conditions might be similar. There might be similar amounts of heat, similar amounts of wear and load that they'll have to figure out in terms of the heat. But in terms of the track, in terms of the way it all goes, this is much, much harder on tire wear than tire degradation this time out. And the teams will really have to focus on their corner speeds, especially in the faster mid-speed corners, which is where last year, towards the end, McLaren were quite good. That's where they won. That's why they won a sprint race in Qatar. That's why they were so damn good in Brazil and also in Silverstone. Here, it's going to be a bit of a challenge for teams like Mercedes, who with this car have actually announced that that's one thing that they intend to get better, the mid to high speed corners. Can their car be more on the edge on places like that? So that story is going to be fun to track. And also, how good are Ferrari with tire wear? Because their entire problem last season was tire degradation. Can they make the circuit work? Can they be closer to Red Bull Racing? And remember, one more key fact, believe it or not, even though Max Verstappen might have won everything there is to win in this entire planet in terms of Formula One, he still has not taken pole position at the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. That's one stat that could potentially change, but who knows? Maybe the streak continues.
Which reminds me, he actually was on one of the greatest pole laps never to be completed in 2022. He just tagged the barrier. 2022, wasn't it? I think,
one, or 2021. The decider, 2021. Oh, what a beautiful lap. Yeah. Oh.
And then he's also never been at the front row. He's never been on the front row in Jeddah, from what I remember. Yeah. But you mentioned a few things. Let's first and foremost pay service to one thing which we always bring up, which is let's never forget the missile strike that happened a couple of years ago. F1 wants us to forget it, but we should never forget it. There was a missile strike that happened. We still continued racing because, hey, we were assured that everything's hunky-dory. Missile strikes just happen in different parts of the world and you should just move on. But we've had three different race winners in the last 3 years: Hamilton, Verstappen, Perez. So that's the order. It's a 42nd race in the Middle East, literally. You also said something about low, medium to high speed, which means teams will come with low downforce setups. I know that they're all bringing different rear wings to cope with low downforce setup. And that's very interesting at the start of the season, because I think whenever you go from when you change circuit configurations and hence the subsequent downforce setups on the car, you end up seeing the order of the midfield also change in the races, right? For example, could Williams suddenly find themselves up ahead given that it's high speed? And you already mentioned McLaren as well, right? Albon has, for example, never scored a point here. They had steering issues in Bahrain. Would they be solved by now? And that's something key I'm looking forward to. Will the pecking order change a little bit after the opening round in Bahrain? And high speed also, it's in under the lights. I remember in 22, there was Verstappen and Leclerc. They actually complained of being dizzy around here because of the speed and the lights and so on. So it's also testing the drivers in a different sensory way this weekend.
Big time, big time. That's going to be one to watch. And lastly, DRS battles. You mentioned them earlier, but they are going to be a proper, proper nightmare, because at this circuit, which is, again, technically going to be a bigger challenge to follow, because dirty air through corners is something that is really impactful in terms of your ability to follow another car. But here, of all the places, two main straights, and the DRS is now activated on lap number 2. So the chaos just becomes even more. And again, same hypothetical scenario. If you're battling for the lead, if, suppose, we have Verstappen fighting against Carlos Sainz, because of course, who else? Verstappen and Carlos Sainz are fighting for the lead on lap number 2. They'll have to play it more tactically, because the straights are long and the DRS is properly powerful around here. And suddenly you might have drivers brake testing each other just to make sure that they don't end up giving the DRS to other drivers or something. That it's sad, but again, that could be a possibility, just to put it out there. That's something that could be on the cards.
And the back straight, could we see a double slipstream overtake that could happen in the first couple of laps? Because we've seen Jehan Daruwala pull it off in Formula 2 a couple of years ago. But you know, I'm going to quickly just wrap who needs to do well in qualifying and then who needs to do well in the race. Could Ferrari score the 250th as a constructor? Leclerc clearly dropped it in Bahrain, even though he was quicker in qualifying in Q2, as we remember. Lance Stroll was the only top five team driver not to be in Q3, made it up for in the race. Perez was not qualifying second, but he was fifth in Bahrain. So he, while he finished second, needs to show better qualifying performance. Daniel Ricciardo was out-qualified by Yuki Tsunoda. Alpines were less than a second or just about a second off Red Bull Racing, but bottom of the grid. And Ocon hasn't been in Q3 for the last five races. Zhou Guan Yu, who finished 11th and impressive in Bahrain, actually has been out-qualified by Bottas. Five races in a row. And I, you know, if you remember early season predictions, we spoke of how there will be one or two driver changes in Audi, Sauber, Stake, whatever you call it. And I've left the last one for qualifying for the last, Sommel, which is Carlos Sainz has been out-qualified by Charles Leclerc eight races in a row. So even though he had a really stonking performance on track in Bahrain in the race, he needs to bring it back in qualifying. Okay.
Yeah.
And if I can just switch to the race, because what, you know, if you were to summarize the Bahrain Grand Prix, the chasing pack actually just didn't chase Red Bull well enough. That's the underlying belief. You know, Ferrari had brake duct issues, and Mercedes had engine cooling issues, and Williams had steering dash issues. Helmut Marko said that Alpha Tauri, V car, whatever we call them, just had a bad strategy that didn't help Yuki Tsunoda. And I'd love to see what Haas is able to do. Kevin Magnussen has scored points at Jeddah for the last two rounds, and that's last 2 years, and that's been the only circuit he's sort of scored points at. And Alpine, they were beaten in Bahrain by 14 seconds by a three-stopping Haas. Okay, so a lot of things to literally look forward to, including if you're a Max Verstappen fan, and we know that there are lots of Dutch fans here. He could score his 100th F1 podium. He's led the world championship for 40 consecutive races. Could he win his ninth consecutive race this weekend?
Wait.
And
are you asking, could he?
Yeah, could he? You never know. You never know.
What you were saying?
Yeah, and I think he had a hat-trick in Abu Dhabi at the end of last year. He had a hat-trick the opening round this year. Could he have a hat-trick of Grand Slams? Oh, I meant Grand Slams. Okay, yeah. Pole, fastest lap, race win, whatever, right? Could he do that in Saudi Arabia as well, right? So, and for all the Hamilton fans, isn't this where he scored his last and final 103rd win in Formula 1 in 2021? Lots of exciting. And since you are you're a Carlos Sainz fan, Charles Leclerc, while has out-qualified him in the last eight races, Leclerc has also got six consecutive front row starts in the last six races, three of which were pole positions. I'm going to just say the last ham stat. Hamilton has been out-qualified by George Russell for the last three races in a row, and Russell has never been out-qualified in Jeddah. So, on to predictions.
Carlos Sainz for the win, always. Always. F1.5, that is.
Yeah, the news in the paddock is that Carlos Sainz is not feeling too well right now and he's gone back to the hotel. But I'm pretty sure medicine will bring him back and bring him in good form when it's time to start driving this race weekend.
What are your predictions, very quickly?
I think it's going to be a closer race. It'll be Verstappen winning, but Ferrari will just probably take second. Mercedes, and I think McLaren will beat Mercedes this time. And I love these tight midfield battles or whatever field battles, because the driver makes such a difference. For everyone who's saying you just need a quick car and you don't need the driver to make a difference, McLaren and Mercedes in Bahrain was just about track position that the drivers originally had. Okay. So if you get track position because of driver brilliance, you're going to finish in that position. But I think McLaren is going to be the team to watch this weekend.
Should be fun. Let's see who all of our money is on. But folks, thank you for listening to this episode of the Inside Light F1 podcast. Let us know your predictions on social media. And the predictions could be anything. They could also be about Mohammed Ben Sulayem and what the next controversy is going to be all about as well. Until then, folks, we'll see you on Monday for the post-race review. Take care. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Inside Line F1 podcast. Before we ended, I just wanted to say a huge thank you to Amazon Music once again for partnering with us on this episode of the podcast.